Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, D&D AI artwork was recognized on social media. EVE Online board game. The card heist at Gen Con.
Oh, okay. I did hear about this.
Yes. And the Any Winners and more of the Gen Con announcements. So we'll kind of do a...
Gen Con wrap-up?
Yeah, kind of wrap-up. A debrief.
As if we were there.
As if we were there. Yeah, the more, though, I hear about the size of Gen Con, it sounds like a nightmare. It sounds like something that you actually can't get anything done. There's probably very little business being done because it's just so crowded and so difficult to actually... schedule things, and it sounds like it's similar to San Diego Comic-Con. The big players are kind of taking over, and people are running there to get stuff to throw on eBay and to get stuff signed, you know. So it's turning into that same kind of nightmare where people are just there to make money off of the event in the secondary market. And yeah, we have a story that talks a little bit about that as well. So let's start with this this finding on social media. So this is the one good thing, you know, everything is under a microscope, and anybody, especially when things are digital, everyone can have access to them and kind of scrutinize what's going on. So the scrutiny on social media has actually turned up something. So Dungeons & Dragons has responded after an artist admits to submitting AI-enhanced art for a new book.
Okay.
So this is a book that in process. It hasn't come out yet, but it's at the printers, I'm sure. And so, the artist admit he's using AI to enhance his artwork, not to completely... remake it, but they released the source book for Bigby's Presents, Glory of the Giants. And I can't remember exactly the image, but it was kind of like a fur cape and small companion. And like, there were wrong numbers of fingers and things were behind and in front of, and joints were a little bit wrong. Okay. So there was some assisting. So WotC has updated their artist guidelines to prevent future AI art because they were incredible. They were so shocked. So how could this happen? So Ilya Skipin, there's an S and an H and a K. Skipin has used AI tools to enhance several pieces of artwork commissioned by Wizards of the Coast. So he's been a concept illustrator for previous works, The Wild Beyond the Witchlight and the original Monster Manual and Dungeon Master's Guide in recent years. And the thing that makes this a little bit suspicious as well, as far as the motives or whatever of the artist, is he was also involved in launching an FTP NFT company in October of 2021. So he's obviously embedded with making as much money producing stuff as fast and dirty as possible.
Right.
So my initial response or my initial thought is maybe the pay is not good. So, you know, freelancers are trying to figure out ways to produce work cheaper, do more work. So maybe they would try to use, AI tools to speed things up because they're unhappy with the pay and they need more money. But this guy just might be, trying to... Who knows? Do whatever. So he's already kind of embedded with scammy kind of stuff. If any artist is involved in NFTs, it has not panned out to be any sort of benefit to artists. Just a bunch of scammers,
that are very bored. Yep.
So a few of the pieces, they weren't fully AI generated, but they were used to either touch up or clean up various parts of the art. So producing things like strange fingers and identical joints. This was first pointed out on social media, and the artist admitted that he used AI tools. And of course, WotC was saying we were completely unaware. What? How is this possible?
It's like we didn't look at the thing before it got submitted.
Yeah, and unfortunately, he would have gotten away with it if he did it today. Because
Hadn't been for those pesky kids?
Yeah, if it hadn't been for those pesky kids. This is 2 years ago. He was commissioned to do this work, and I'm sure the software is like exponentially getting better month by month. So
wow, it was 2 years to commission. So that just goes to show, because I heard about this online and things. Yeah, okay. I didn't really look closely at the picture because it was like a little. Sorry, it was an X-sized image, right? And I'm like, okay, I don't particularly care to zoom in. But the person admitted it. All I saw was, it was an artist they had worked with for a decent amount of time. They admitted to using tools, I didn't know that was commissioned like 2 years ago, but like someone said, at this point in the process when the book is like not leaked, but kind of like teaser stuff is out. Like you said, it's at the printer, right? Mm-hmm, like it's probably going to go to print with that on there, right? Because it's just too far along.
Right. Yeah. So that's,
or correction, it's not too far along. Wizards is not going to delay it.
Yeah, they're not going to lose that money. Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. They're not going to take that hit. So basically what they've said they're discussing is revising the work, and it's going to be updated in the digital versions.
Yeah, sure.
So on D&D Beyond and the PDFs, though, they perhaps may update the art. They're under no... they can say that they did and whatever. And it's going to become that software thing. It's like, oh, you must not have updated. We must not have pushed the update. You know, it's going to be this thing where we're going to be into software territory now, where people don't know even what version of the book they're looking
version.
At.
No version. No version. It's D&D. Right. I even forget what... Next. Yes. No, it's not Next. No. Sorry, Next was the 5e playtest.
Yeah, this is just 5e forever. 5e infinite. Yes. So yeah, this was in the Big Geese Presents The Glory of the Giants. And so they will update the future print run. So if there's a second printing of this book, which there won't be, because these subsequent volumes, I was looking at some, somebody leaked some numbers.
Okay.
And some YouTubers have been talking about it. And after the three core books came out and have sold like millions, everything now is just, it's just like this steep decline. They can't sell books to save their lives anymore. So.
Okay, this is a bit of a tangent, but I would... I'm not curious enough to go crunch the numbers on my own.
Mm-hmm.
I am curious about the types of books. Like, okay, is this book like mostly adventure?
Oh, yeah.
Is this book mostly rules content? Is this like, I wonder if there's got to be some kind of pattern of some book types of books selling better than others.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely is. Yeah, the numbers that leak too are... retail numbers, so kind of big box retail numbers.
Right.
So bookstores, Walmart, Target, they're not Amazon or your friendly local game store numbers.
Mm.
So we don't know anything about those, but these were the numbers that somebody got a hold of from big retail. So these are big retail numbers, and they're kind of, they're a little bit smaller than you'd expect, but compared to anybody else is doing like 1/10 of what WotC is doing. But it seems like the trend seemed to be, of course, the three core books, but then anything that was a redo of, you know, past stuff that had some retro appeal to it, and then anything that had new subclasses, new spells, like things that, you know, people thought were necessary, that helped the sales of the books.
Okay.
But in recent times, these last few releases, they're under like 100,000. They're in like the 90s, and they're getting lower and lower.
Mm.
And I think just because you can only buy so many books and your group can only play through so much stuff. And if you've gotten smart about it and are starting to do your own setting, your own campaigns, you're going to go away from their written stuff, their modules and
or
adventures.
People are going digital.
Yes. Oh, that's true too. Yeah. These weren't digital numbers as well.
Right.
Yeah. So that we don't have any idea, because it could be significant digital sales or not. But we already talked about in the past, Paizo has, you know, said they are banning the use of all AI artwork. So Paizo has already made a positive and very strong stance against this.
Sorry, so what was WotC's stance? We're discussing it?
Yeah. So they're talking about reworking these images to, you know, the controversial images. And the company did note that they, what they have said and always say is Dungeons & Dragons is made by humans for humans. So that's,
but they're not outright banning non-human art.
They're not I think that they are putting guidelines. They're creating some guidelines, so we'll see what those are. I don't know if they
are those guidelines. If you're going to use AI tools, be sneakier about it.
Yeah,
be
sneakier. And the problem is, though, I think in the future we're going to be in trouble, because it's going to be almost impossible to separate things now, because now Photoshop is incorporating so much AI into basic tools, into basic brushes and things. So you're using AI art if you use certain software.
Yep.
It's inevitable. But you're not using it in the way that's, you know, that people are objecting to, where it's using data sets from stolen, scraped, you know, artwork off the internet. But we're still going to have a lot of, you know, AI assisting things, so we'll have to, I mean, there's no way to avoid it, and it's just gonna, we're kind of gonna gradually just bleed into that. And I guess because of the, you know, Google Images and there being such a huge amount of free artwork, that's happened for a long time in concept art and things, is people have just been pulling images and you know, because they're digital, they've just been repurposing images to do clouds and backgrounds and stuff to really quickly slap together comps and things for, you know, concept art and for different different industries. So that's kind of existed, you know, people appropriating art has existed for a while. There are sites where you can buy the royalty-free mm-hmm. licensed version of that stuff. But then there's also people just grabbing anything they can.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see.
I still remember the time at, because we use a lot of images for our stuff at work. Because mm-hmm. we've got to produce, like, slides and teaching material and stuff. And, like, we have free pick accounts. And that site has become basically unusable because of the amount of just AI-generated shit that comes up when you do a search. Right. But I remember one time, like, trying to find, like, specific things, and one of my bosses was like, well, we can just Google it. Why can't we use that picture? I'm just like, oh, Jesus. Like, do you understand how copyright works? Right. Like, especially because we're charging students to buy these courses, right?
Yeah,
like,
if you're making money.
He's like, well, it's on the internet. We can just use it. I'm like, that's not even remotely how it works, right?
Jeez. Yeah, and so that's the thing, too. If there is a lot of AI-generated art in these D&D books, I'm not paying money for that because it's not...
Let's be honest, Jeremy. Were you ever paying money for a D&D book, right?
But, yeah, I mean, that, like, really discourages me from trusting them to, like, you know, paying a full sticker price for anything when I can't trust, you know, that they're actually going to...
Art is expensive, Jeremy.
Yeah, right. That's right. They gotta save money somewhere.
Yeah, they do.
So, yeah, that really, really turned me off. And their response was very, oh, we'll review that policy and possibly rework. So we'll see. And they have, there's no motivation for them to do it. If it keeps them ahead of everybody else and making more
profit.
They're
already ahead. They don't need any more ahead.
Right. And this is funny because this comes, I mean, this was dug up on this was discovered on social media. Like mm-hmm. someone pointed this out on social media. And this happened just after Hasbro's big press release that we're embracing AI for developing for board games and everything. So Hasbro has already said they're embracing AI. Oh, WotC has not said anything specifically.
Well, they have because they're apparent.
They're not embracing it.
Yeah. We're not embracing it. Yep.
So we'll see.
That's a phrase. Yeah.
Yes. But an interesting piece. So we talked about a couple weeks ago the 5 parsecs. Game got official miniatures, licensed
still
miniatures.
Still keep meaning to go check that out.
Yeah, and and have a PDF that you can take a look at if you want to see the rule book. Yeah, so I jumped back on. So I subscribed to these guys a while back and kind of fell off because I wasn't using enough of the models. Mm. They're kind of early adopter tier opened up a few slots again, so I jumped back on. So Titanforge, I'm back on with Titanforge.
And so I'm expecting like a slew of miniatures here. Yes, something pouring out here. Yeah.
And so good news for Titanforge is they are doing the official miniatures for the EVE Online board game.
Oh.
So yeah, so they're working with Modiphius, and the story with the 5 parsecs official miniatures is people saw that they were already, because they do a lot of like proxy miniatures, like proxy sculpts for, you know, Space Marines for various games.
Yeah.
And they were already doing a really interesting set of things that worked well with 5 parsecs. And so Modiphius saw these and said, well, why don't you just do the official ones? We'll send you all the concept art and you use that for the basis of doing an official licensed set of miniatures, because already Modiphius has been doing a lot of miniatures and in selling them as STLs. Now, if they're not, like part of the Kickstarter, they're actually manufactured miniatures. Like they're physical miniatures. But then once they reach the stores, they usually just become digital files. But for many of their releases for RPGs, John Carter, Star Trek, they all have miniature sets.
Oh, cool.
So those are available as STL. So they're kind of in that space, and it's nice that they're working with a studio that's that does good work. So, yes, the Iceland-based CCP Games that does EVE Online, which is celebrating their 20th anniversary. That's insane. They've been around for 20 years. Yeah, they're one of the older MMOs and still going. I mean, they're not huge, but...
Yeah, but they're still going. Yeah.
And it's interesting that it's the same server. Like, everyone's playing in the same world on EVE. So when somebody does damage to the world, everybody feels it. It's a big world, but it's all the same server. So CCP Games has partnered with Titanforge to do their EVE Online board game, which will probably be similar. It's a 4X game, so it'll feel maybe a little bit like Twilight Imperium, a little bit like some of the other popular kind of 4X board games that we're used to. So, of course, the 4Xs, if you don't know, are explore the unknown, expand your empire, exploit the most resources, and ultimately exterminate all opposition. So so one of the more famous Twilight Imperium or Eclipse, both of those are very similar. Maybe Eclipse is a little less, not quite the scale of Twilight Imperium.
Twilight Imperium, that was a good game, or Twilight Imperium 3rd Edition was a good game. Mm-hmm. Played it like once a year because A, didn't have a table big enough.
Right.
B, it's like And an 8-hour game.
Yes, yeah, you have to make time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So EVE Online, the MMO, is known for having some of the most ruthless players on the internet, of course, celebrating its 20th anniversary. So it's had galaxy-spanning civil wars, and they had a mechanic where you could, from the resources that you gathered in the game, convert that actually back to actual money. And so the game itself actually funded a real-world casino at one point.
I'm so sorry?
Crazy stuff has happened with that game. Yeah, the stories, I mean, you could just forever go on YouTube or whatever to listen to stories of the crazy stuff, that the betrayals and things that have happened in EVE Online. People, like, you know, steal entire empires up from under each other. It's just insane. It's just insane. But, yeah, brand director at CCP said, with a player-driven gameplay and complex virtual economy, EVE Online lends itself organically to a compelling board game experience.
Does it? I don't see how that works. I don't see how one thing translates to the other. I mean, maybe a ripe IP to turn into a board game, but like, because this thing is so complex and fun, it doesn't make a good board game. Right. What? Sorry.
Yes, and so as they celebrate 2 decades, they said that Titanforge understands New Edens, that's the setting for EVE, New Edens' enduring legacy, and is equipped to bring our iconic spaceship MMO to a different medium while maintaining its signature elements. Mm-hmm. So they talk a little bit about it having Eurogame mechanics, but
I'm automatically disinterested.
Yeah, right. But this,
I don't want my 4X game to be a fucking meeple placement game. Sorry.
Yeah, and so that's a little bit of an odd thing to say, because what that means is it's more deterministic and less random, like, you know, less, it doesn't rely on randomness of dice, and it's more, you know, building little machines that, and so people aren't really playing against each other, they're playing next to each other. Right. And so this game is more about, EVE is more about direct conflict and war on a massive scale. So I don't know. I mean, they're probably just saying that to not have people think, oh, this is just a Eurotrash, you know, or Ameritrash version of an Icelandic MMO.
Okay. I'm not going to buy this because I have more than enough games and I'm already doing other stuff. But as someone who is interested in game design, and as someone who has thought a lot about making a similar type of game, I wonder how they're going to address this problem. Because like you said, a Euro game can lend itself to being 4 people playing solitaire next to each other, right?
Right.
Which can be fun. Mm. But like you said, EVE Online is like you're supposed to go into conflict with each other.
Right, right.
So I, even like I think we played it like once or twice. Eminent Domain by Tasty Minstrel Games, which is like a kind of like a deck building space explorer thing. Like that's really fun. And kind of how they got around it was like whenever anyone plays, like takes a main action, everyone else in sequence gets to choose whether they do a similar but lesser thing or do like a within limits, do something completely different. Mm-hmm. So it kind of factored into playing, like you say, oh, I want to do this thing, but oh, that'll help these other people. Or so like you're not waiting for someone to finish their turn with their own little engine they're building. You actually do get to do stuff, but it's still not all that interactive. Right. So anyway, that was a long spiel. I am curious how they fix that problem, especially with saying it's like a Euro game.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And it'll be nice though that this is going to another medium. I think there have been maybe some novels, maybe some fiction in the universe, but mostly it's just been the game. And the factions are very interesting, like how they approach things, because they avoid a lot of the stereotypes and kind of falling into like everything is very unique, and it's a lot of it has been inspired just by how the players have played these factions and things. So as they've done more and more updates, the only problem, the only thing I worry about and why I haven't gone back, it went free to play maybe like 5 years ago, 8 years ago. And that's changed things, because the main mechanic in the game as an MMO is you skill train, and skill train takes real time. And so you're constantly like deciding what things you're training on, and that makes you your ship, you know, you a better pilot, so your ships are more capable, or you have access to different types of ships. But when you're doing it free, you barely can train a free account. So they moved to free to play, which has probably kept them alive, but I think they also have a lot of Chinese funding now. So it's like the company has changed a bit. I love the IP. I love the setting. It's really interesting. I keep getting drawn back into it, but as far as so this is nice. So what I'm saying, long story short, I'm glad it's in another medium so people can see this world and new, you know, like learn the kind of New Eden history and stuff.
Because you think they'll translate to a board game?
I think it. Yeah, there's a lot of things. The kind of like little granular tweaky stuff is not going to be in there.
Right.
But I think as far as if they make the factions oppose each other and have kind of slightly different abilities, and because they're going to do the whole kind of looks like the whole scale of ships and everything. Mm. So I'm not sure though about. I guess it's got everything though. It's got, you know, kind of resource
management.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of resource management and things that will make sense. Yeah, it should work. I mean, it should work and have a really interesting flavor that we haven't seen before, because it's not going to be just generic space, you know, the generic sci-fi. Mm. It's got a very unique flavor. So yeah, we'll see. But Titanforge is another interesting story. They were founded in 2011, so they've been around for a while as well.
Did 3D printing exist back then?
They've been a Polish company that is best known for their miniatures, but I think they've been doing a lot of stuff involved in the tabletop and like kind of digital, digital art for a while. And they have had remarkable success with their Patreon. So it remains one of the single largest ongoing, so, you know, their Patreon account, ongoing crowdfunding efforts in all of tabletop.
Nice.
So they fund the entire company just on their Patreon.
Wow, nice.
So this is like, you know, gravy. These licenses and stuff are just are great. So, of course, they're known for now alternative sculpts and proxies for other game systems. But they do have their own, in recent history, Bloodfields and Grid Wars are two of their own original games that they produced their own miniatures for, and they've done Kickstarters and to fund those as well, and those like keep getting supported, you know, through Patreon releases. So the Titanforge founder Roman Lakomiak says, as a studio dedicated to crafting high quality board games that ignite the imagination, EVE Online's player driven world is a perfect fit to make an ultimate tabletop sandbox. The project is unlike anything we've made before, and fuels Titanforge's commitment to delivering an authentic and captivating experience for EVE fans and board game enthusiasts alike. So these are some very particular people, though. So it's going to be interesting to see how many players. And I think EVE is, you know, around the like 100,000 kind of active players, maybe still. So it's not going to be a huge, it's not going to be multi-million dollar Kickstarter, but they should sell, you know, a number of copies. So this is going to... they're going to be doing a Kickstarter, but in this September, September 21st, at the EVE Fan Fest in Reykjavik, Iceland, if you happen to be there.
Okay.
They're going to demo the game, so you'll see the first kind of demonstration of that game. So later this year, they haven't dated the Kickstarter yet, but they're going to go to crowdfunding for it. So yeah, what they've shown so far is some, you know, nice ships on some little flight stands and some hex, you know, kind of hex cards to build your world out. So if it is going to be, you know, kind of a little more randomly generated and stuff, yeah, it'll have some replayability and shake things up by playing different factions. Yeah, so we'll see how it goes. But yeah, I like that IP, so I'm happy to see that they're actually moving into something else. They've tried as a game studio to do different types of games using EVE. So they had a first person shooter that actually was set in the EVE universe, that was, so you're in your ship and and on planet side, you've got your armies and your little task, you know, little special forces doing stuff, and that has some connection to what's happening in space. But yeah, that I think they shut that down.
Oh.
Sorry, it wasn't ever successful to make that work. But they were trying to expand what they were doing online with the game and try to, like, you know, dig a little bit deeper in what that setting is capable of.
Someone who has never played EVE.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say I'm going to get it so we can see what it's like, but...
but I may end up getting it. If you look if you look over there, there's a few EVE books, EVE art books and things online. So,
oh, yeah.
It may end up on the shelves behind us at some point.
Well, hopefully it doesn't end up on the shelf. Hopefully it
on the table, like
on the table and opened and played.
Yes, that would be good too. Nice. Well, the next story is something a little interesting, and something that Matt called the nerd Lufthansa heist.
Okay.
The nerd version of the Lufthansa heist. There was a massive amount of cards that were stolen at Gen Con 2023. So
a massive amount of cards or a massive...
A pallet. Yes. So this was not not a small... This was Lufthansa level.
Right? Okay, I want to hear this.
Level of heist. So over $300,000 worth of cards were taken. So the Indianapolis WRTV has reported that cards were taken. The theft occurred on Wednesday. So I guess that's the setup day, because I think the convention is Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Yeah. So I think this was the Wednesday setup. And so there's pallet jacks everywhere. There's boxes everywhere. So somebody got a hold of a pallet jack, and they went up to a pallet of, and what it's what they found out now to be, I won't spoil it, but yeah, they found a pallet of sealed cases of cards. They put their jack underneath it and just walked away.
And I hope they drove. Unless it's like a hand pallet.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, it's one of
those.
Oh,
I was thinking that's not a forklift. The jack. Okay.
Yeah, the jack is just like little prongs that just lift up a pallet. So yeah, they're just carting it along, and they probably had their little lanyards on, and it's like, oh yeah, they're supposed to be here. So two thieves were able to make off with all of these, and I'm surprised it's a convention hall. Where are the cameras? You know, I would expect you to be under camera all the time because people are doing all kinds of misbehaving in those things.
Maybe that's why there's not.
Yeah. You don't want to see.
What happens at Gen Con stays at Gen Con, right?
Yes. So we know what cards were stolen, but immediately after this heist, people were freaking out because one of the main reasons they were there, and I think for Saturday, was the early release of the Disney Lorcana cards.
I knew it.
So immediately people are going insane, and that ended up being quite a shit show. Anyhow, they were, you know, having some event releasing these packs. They're terribly understaffed for massive amounts of visitors at this convention. People are lining up, then there's crowds clashing into the lines. There's people running down hallways, you know, to be the first to get at these, like, you know, holographic Mickey Mouse cards.
I fucking hate it. I hate it. I hate it, right?
Yes.
Sorry. Anyway, continue.
But immediately, Ravensburger released a statement. All of our products at Gen Con are secure and accounted for. So fear not, loyal line standers queuing up people. Yeah, so people waited in line for as long as 18 hours to get their hands.
I hate you. get a life.
Sorry, 16 hours. It's a little bit better.
A little bit better, but still, come on.
Yeah, maybe the show isn't actually open 18 whole hours to get their Disney Lorcana cards. So they were in hot demand since the product was announced. And, of course, the official release isn't until September 1st for this wonderful game, which is going to totally disrupt the aftermarket for any card game that's ever existed ever. So there's a Crime Stoppers number that the Indiana police released if you have any information about the culprits that perpetrated this. But released now. The information is now, we know for a fact that these were all Magic the Gathering cards. Ravensburger was correct. None of their cards were involved. It was an entire pallet of Magic the Gathering.
Okay, so.
I wonder if this number is retail value or if they're talking about, like, you know, aftermarket value.
I'm curious now. Do we have any indication why it was initially reported or rumored to be or thought to be Disney Lorcana or whatever, Lorcana cards?
I think just because it was trading cards and people's biggest fear was, oh no, does that mean there's going to be even less of those cards available? Immediately that was the panic, you know, because this happened before the convention even started. Right. Yeah,
so there wasn't any kind of like, there wasn't an announcement that, yes, a pallet of Disney Lorcana cards have been jacked. It was just a pallet of cards have been jacked.
People freaked out. Yes. So move over Lufthansa heist. This is the biggest thing to happen in the geek world for a long time. Yeah, so that's pretty silly and pretty funny. But it also shows that they've got to get, if these collectibles and things are that valuable, if it's more than $250,000 that someone can walk away with, security cameras, you know, like you know, checkpoints with you know, wristbands and stuff,
implanted barcodes.
Tattoo.
That's kind of funny that if the cards are this valuable, there isn't better security. But also, there are pieces of fucking cardboard, man. Like, why are they that valuable?
Yeah, right? Yeah, and it's interesting too because these aren't trackable. They don't have serial numbers or anything, so they probably can. You know, these are just going to be showing up on eBay.
Don't give Disney ideas, man.
Yeah, right. So, it's pretty silly. But speaking of Gen Con, we have finally the results. We've all been waiting for the Annie Awards for 2023. Yep. And not a lot of surprises, but some things that, you know, kind of remind us of the year that has gone on before.
Everything blends together for me. Sorry, like I don't. There is no distinct year end where people are like, "Oh, what's your favorite movie of all of the year?" I'm like, "Sorry, what when, now? When? Movies come out in discrete years?"
Yes. But Free League cleaned up. They won several awards in kind of various places, and there were some nice things to see. So just kind of the highlights. Mm-hmm. Vaison's Mythic Britain and Ireland won Product of the Year and Best Setting. Linda Codega from Gizmodo, IO9 and Gizmodo, won Best Online Content with her OGL coverage. Yeah, of course, yeah. So she broke that story. The best game this year was Fabula Ultima by Need Games, which is very JRPG kind of inspired looking. This was interesting. Blade Runner, the core rulebook, won Best Layout and Design. Mm-hmm. The starter set won Best Cartography. It's got a ton of maps and stuff in it. I thought that was pretty funny. But yeah, they do really cool. They are really cool maps of each location. So there is cartography involved. The Runes of Symborum, the Bestiary, won Best Monster or Adversary. Avatar Legends won Best Rules. Blackbirds, I think it's the Andrews McMeel Publishing, but it's the guys that do Zweihänder, won Best Production Values. So I haven't seen that book, but yeah. And then the best writing was Swords of Serpentine,
which I've been interested in.
Yeah. So some interesting stuff. And then there were some other things that kind of stood out. Best Adventure, Broken Tales, the World Anvil Publishing one for that, because they're kind of like taking a fairy tale and like turning it into a fantasy setting. Right. So taking like the iconic characters and making them kind of work in a more of a fantasy world. And this was interesting too. The best aid accessory non-digital Dekuma.
Oh yeah, yeah. We have a copy of.
Yeah, the R&D for your RPG was the gold winner from Golden Lasso Games this year. And what is the best family product? Avatar Legends starter set won for best family. And trophy. Well, they were second place they got silver for best game.
Nice.
So the trophy RPG, the Gauntlet Gaming Community, Hedge Maze Press got second place for best game. Okay. So yeah, they're up there. And of course, best podcast is not the one you're listening to, of course.
This is a podcast.
But I think he won last year. Is that possible? Do you win consecutive years? Seth Skorkowski. Don't you know? I think actually that's a Chicago accent he has. I'm not sure. But it feels a little... It's that Midwestern region, right. I believe. He is the winner of Best Podcast again.
Well...
I think, again.
I in no means mean to disparage any of the winners. But like my joke about, not being able to identify discrete years. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't vote for the Emmys this year because it's a lot. There's how many categories, man.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to wonder, like, this thing won Best Adventure, this thing won Best Monster, this thing won Best whatever. But and I'm like, what is the size of the field? I understand that the difficulty in just saying best product, right? And just lumping everything together it's so disparate. But on the other hand, like, it's like the Guinness World Record for most acorns stuffed in your mouth, right? And you're just like, okay, that was being a little bit silly, right? But like, how narrow are these fields, and how many entries do you get for a year, right? And if it's I don't know. I guess I've kind of said my piece, but not this year. But looking back at previous, I'm just like, that one. What were they up against, right?
I don't know. Yeah, the categories are interesting because they have like things like best production values, best writing, best organized play. So it's a lot of interesting. They're trying to hit all the different, the digital and physical and all of the and then of course now media. Like they're talking about the people covering the industry as well. So yeah, you're right. It is interesting and it is pretty discouraging. It almost feels like a local election where it's like, I don't know any of these people. Comptroller, I don't know who. Once you get down to these levels, it's like, I have no experience with this. I don't play this kind of game. Do I vote? Should I vote? Should I just vote for who I know? Yeah, and that might be name recognition probably when it's online based. Plays a big role. It's just like, I know this company, I know this guy.
Sometimes when I was voting, that's what I did. I'd be like, I know these people. Well, I know them. All right, I know them. Right,
right.
Just like,
yeah. But that's the lineup for this year. And some of the other announcements and things. There wasn't anything that was breathtaking or wow, this is amazing. from this Gen Con, but Starfinder announced their second edition.
Okay.
Yep. And so, Starfinder announced their second edition. Death in Space announced an expansion. Mm-hmm. And Free League's Gen Con news was Dragonbane is the retail version came out August 15th. Moria the Long Dark for the One Ring is going to go to Kickstarter on the 29th. Mm. Waste 20X4, an expansion for the Cyborg RPG, is coming out. Dead Flag Contracts, Death in Space expansion. Oh, yeah, that's the name of the Death in Space expansion. Right. Death Flag Contracts. The Dunwich Horror Lovecraft illustration book, which they did a Call of Cthulhu, I think, previously.
Okay.
And then, of course, late pledges are available for the Walking Dead Universe RPG. AMC presents. And, so there wasn't anything that was like, wow, I wish I was there.
Yeah.
To hear that amazing announcement. Wait, late pledges are open for... Yeah, so I like a lot of the stuff that Free League is doing. And I'm surprised at some of the negativity in comments and things. There are like maybe some kind of older gamers or whatever that are, you know, not real positive on Free League. But the only thing that I've really felt is a weird misstep in licensing is that Walking Dead game.
Well...
It's going to work with their Year Zero engine. Yep. Very well.
Yep.
But they could have just done Twilight 2000 with zombies. You know, they could have just added done a zombie.
They could have, but I mean, like, okay, I have no idea. Pure speculation here, right? Maybe AMC's approached them and said, you want to do a Walking Dead? And like...
And it will sell,
It'll sell. Mm-hmm. Like, as a game company, if someone approaches you and says, we want you to make this game for us, you're going to go... Yeah, nah.
But, yeah, right. Because a lot of it is about raising their profile. Yeah. I think that's very true. Is when they get these kinds of licenses, it's like now people that have never heard of Free League before know The Walking Dead and like, oh, this company made that Walking Dead game.
I'm not going to do it because I'm not a mathematician or a statistician or anything like that. But I do want to know if something like The Walking Dead, which is known outside of tabletop gaming, I wonder. How many people, any, it brings into the hobby.
Right.
I've wondered about that. Whenever you see a licensed game, right, that's like, does that work?
Yeah,
I don't have numbers either way, so.
Yeah, and we wondered that also about, you know, like those weird licensed Magic the Gathering. I think there's even a Walking Dead Magic the Gathering thing.
And there is.
Yeah,
see, that I chalk up to... Greed on the part of Hasbro,
right, so those sorts of things. That was one thing that stood out in the retail sales, and it's probably because it was like big box retail sales, is the Rick and Morty version of the starter set outsold a huge amount of the Adventures and Settings books that came out for 5e. That's the world we're living in.
And belch into the mic, I would. I can't. It's like
we'll get a soundboard for that. Yeah. We'll have that on demand. All right, so that will do it for this week. So yes, another Gen Con in the books.
As if we win. I'm just like, another Gen Con done.
Yeah, I'm like 2020. I was all set to be there, and the more I'm hearing about the convention, like the less interested. Yeah, the less interested I am. And if there's not mandatory showering before attendance of the convention, I'm not really interested in smelling that. So anyhow, that'll do it for this week. So, So where can people find you?
Sorry, on X.
Oh, yes.
X. Caught me on. All right, you can find me on X, Threads, Blue Sky, Instagram, right? That's Hivemynd, HYVEMYND. Where I'm complaining about there being too many foreign tourists down when I try and go pick up my hobby supplies in Osaka.
Mm-hmm.
And also looking at 6mm science fiction models.
All right.
I've been trying not to, but yeah.
It's
International shipping is actually a godsend here. Oh. So I'm like, that's great. What's the shipping? Oh, no. Jesus Christ. Never mind, right? Right? Especially for things that are like this big, right?
Right. Yeah, you don't think
that. You get 100 of them, right? Oh, what's the shipping? Oh, never mind. Yeah, international shipping. It sucks when you only need like bits and pieces from different lines. Cool. Mm-hmm. Hey, that's reasonable. What's the shipping? And you're just like, it is more than what I'm paying for the item.
Yeah.
Never mind. I'm sorry, right? So yeah, so if you want to see more rants like that, not read, read more rants like that. Yeah, finally on social media. So
excellent.
How about you?
And I am still doing my single panel gag cartoon. So Abuse Cartoons on YouTube and Twitch. And that's a weekly cartoon. I do two a week. And the live stream is me drawing them and eating Japanese snacks. And it's a fun hang, a lively chat. And you can help me even write it, because sometimes I get stuck and I have no idea what to do.
A few times too many, you're like, I don't know what I'm doing. What is this?
Oh, somebody write this for me. I'm completely blocked. Yes.
Well, it's better than doing it with AI.
Yeah, that's right. It's not AI. It's crowdsourced. By humans for humans. Yep. It's crowdsourced. So, yeah, for humans by humans. And if you'd like to support what we're doing with the weekly, and like our worshipper Abyss, okay, yes, on YouTube, you can click the join button below the video if you're watching the live stream to become a member. For as little as a dollar, you can see everything we're posting. We have two entire audiobooks for Mutant Chronicles are on there, as well as a lot of the short stories and fiction from the source books, and a lot of other stuff. Actual plays, the raw audio from actual plays and things that we've done is all in that member section, as well as Patreon. So patreon.com/upturntable, you can become a weakling.
Yes, the strongest of all supporters.
Yes. and thank you so much for everyone that's supporting us there. And you can also find us, of course, upturntable.com. And we are now officially, there was a little bit of a conflict between the old podcast name and the new podcast name, but everything is getting straightened out for a lot of the platforms now. So things like Spotify and things were much more findable. So I just straightened out Spotify.
Okay.
And that's going to, for some reason, be connected to Patreon soon. I don't know how that works, but I'll keep you guys updated. Like if there is some kind of members Spotify thing that Patreon members get, we'll make sure you know all about that. Nice. And an upturn table on all social media. So that is it for this week.
I'm going to send you a Blue Sky invite.
Oh, yes, yes. That's right. And we'll need to get upturn table on Blue Sky. So thanks for watching and listening, and we'll be back again next week.
Yep. Later, mortals.
Goodbye.